welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and we are welcoming back one of our favorite guests. Please tell us who you are and about your latest book.
I am Riley Sager, and you might know me from Final Girls, Last Time I Lied, Lock Every Door, and Home Before Dark. And my newest book is called Survive the Night. And I like to summarize it very simply: a girl, a killer, a car. And that was pretty much the kind of idea that just popped into my head.
Yeah, it's very different from your other books, which, you know, it's just kind of difficult to say because all of your books are very distinct from each other. I wouldn't say that they follow any particular formula other than they play a little bit with horror tropes. Although this one does too. You're really not 100% sure what's going on exactly, other than the fact that Charlie, she's a college student. She's decided, you find out very early, she's decided to leave college. She's riddled with guilt about something that happened to a friend of hers. She's leaving behind this wonderful boyfriend that she found in college. And this is also in the 90s. So there are no cell phones, or beepers might be a thing, but it's not something that really comes into play. And she puts her name up on like a ride board, which was a thing that you used to have in colleges, where like if you needed a ride home, you would just like randomly put your name up and strangers would answer you.
You would put your name and your phone number so random strangers could contact you. And it just was...
Yeah.
It was crazy that's what we used to do.
Which it really is, because I remember all of the Take Back the Night programs and, you know, like you're told not to get into a car with a stranger. But I guess if you need a ride home and it's college and they look at your name on a college board, they're A-OK. So, yeah. So she gets this ride home with this mysterious guy who happens to be going exactly where she's going, and mayhem ensues.
Mayhem does indeed ensue over the course of one very stressful night for Charlie. And when I came up with the idea, I really wanted to challenge myself and see if I could write something that kind of took place in real time. Like, I really tried to time it out where an hour in the book is really like the hour it takes you to read that section of the book. I really wanted it to feel like people were in that car riding along with Charlie in real time.
Yeah, it definitely worked. And, you know, I went to college in the 90s, although a little bit later than Charlie did. So that was definitely a hook for myself. And I've been actually noticing lately that a lot of authors have been using that time period as, to write thrillers or horror. And we touched upon a little bit the fact that there were no cell phones back then. Is it easier to write a story like this, where technology isn't so connective? I would hesitate to say that it's become a trope, but I think it's definitely a very useful device because we're so used to things being connected.
Yeah, like technology is making it very hard for thriller writers because you can track down almost anyone at any time. And there are cameras everywhere, like at every store entrance, every ATM, every place. And so we have these devices that just make it so easy to get help. And so I knew that this was going to be set in the past, because like it couldn't, the story couldn't be told in a world where cell phones exist and GPS exist and Uber exist, where if the book took place today, she would just like Google Josh, like
decide he's shady,
look him up on Facebook, be like, oh no, and then like call an Uber, and then it's so, it just, there would have been no book. So I really wanted to put it in a time where you were at the mercy of payphones and fold out roadmap.
Yeah, I know. I know I've mentioned a few times, you know, how cell phones change the way that, you know, change like anything. I mean, we'll go back and we'll look at movies, like for instance, Goonies, and that movie would be done in 5 minutes. It would be like, look, oh man, look, here's the Fratellis. Is there a reward for them? Oh, our town is saved. Let's send this to the police. And that would pretty much be the end, and there'd be no treasure hunt. I'm very excited though that Charlie was a film theory major in this, because I was a film theory major, and I know that you were a film theory.
So was I, yes.
Yeah.
It prepared us for nothing.
Nothing. Except ruining movies for people that we watch it with.
It was such a fun major to have, because it was like, okay, today we're going to watch this movie, and then next class we're going to talk about the movie, and then we're going to write a paper about the movie. And it was just so fun. And little did we know that it prepares you for absolutely nothing except going on to graduate school to study more movies, to still have no experience in doing anything. So I don't regret it, but at the same time, part of me is thinking, maybe I should have done something that's slightly more practical.
No, I think that, first of all, as a film theory person, I enjoy ruining movies for people I'm watching them with. You know, I mean, I'm always analyzing everything, and everybody who's with me is like, ah, here she goes again. But I thought that that was a really good thing for the main character, because she almost like sees everything as a movie and analyzes what's going on in her film theory brain. And I thought that that was really cool. There's a few other things happening, but I don't really want to talk about it too much, because I know the audience likely has not read the book yet and would probably like to approach it fresh. But there is definitely something about people who are wired to film theory that will look at a situation that feels like a trope and analyze it to the real world.
Yeah, I really wanted to play around with just the movies themselves, and to have Charlie think and act through like this lens of what she knows from cinema. And I like to say that the real plot of the book is her learning to become, like, that she was living as a supporting player in her own life. And through the course of the night, she becomes her own leading lady. And I think that's a really good journey for a character to take.
Yeah, I would say so. She had this friendship with her roommate, where she was almost like the best friend trope, you know, like her roommate was this like larger than life personality. And both of them kind of had backgrounds where, you know, their family life was a little bit different, but her roommate was like almost like an old film star, and Charlie was happy enough to be the best friend support system. But as you mentioned, as time goes on, she has to realize that she's sort of, you know, she's the main character in this story. But guilt plays a really, really big role into the probably poor choices that she makes. How did you decide to bring that as part of her journey?
I knew she needed to have a good reason to want to leave campus and, you know, take this risk in the middle of the night with a stranger in a car. But I also really just liked the idea of movies as medicine, almost. Like movies are comfort food for a lot of people, and I do this as well. Like if I'm not feeling good, if I'm down, if I'm sick, like first thing I do is just, you know, crawl into bed and put on a Disney movie. And so there's a lot of people that I think have like their certain comfort food movies, and for Charlie, like all movies are her comfort food. And she's had a rough go of things. Her parents were killed in a car accident when she was a teenager. And her best friend is murdered. And so she's really just traumatized and immersing herself in these movies, and to probably not the best effect, because it does play with how she perceives things.
So I have to ask then, what's your favorite Disney movie to watch when you're not well?
Mary Poppins.
Really? Good choice.
Mary Poppins is, I get asked this a lot, like, what are your favorite movies? And I'm like, okay, Jaws, Rear Window, probably Silence of the Lambs, and Mary Poppins and the Sound of Music, which is now a Disney movie, which is amazing.
Yeah, I, you know, the thing about Mary Poppins, which makes me laugh because we're talking about horror tropes, is a few years back, somebody reworked the trailer for it with different music that made it look like a horror movie, and it was perfect.
It was wonderful.
But yeah, that's really cool. Because I like to watch thriller movies or horror movies when I'm not feeling well. Generally because I guess maybe it elicits some sort of like sweat, and then I feel a little bit better because my body is sort of sweating it out. But I like the idea of movies as medicine, which actually you've been watching movies on Facebook Live with other authors recently.
We did. Yes. Because the movie night started like last year when the pandemic first hit. Abby from Crime by the Book, which is a wonderful mystery and thriller blog, she and I decided to watch Jaws at the same time, and then we would tweet about it, and then we went on Instagram and discussed it for an hour. And it was so much fun that we just decided to, okay, let's just keep doing it until we get sick of it. So we did probably like a dozen movies last year. And when Survive the Night, when we were preparing for release, we thought like a great way to publicize this book that's chock full of movie references is some of the movies that are referenced in the book. And so we watched Sunset Boulevard and Singing in the Rain, Psycho, Star Wars, and The Silence of the Lambs. And then for the grand finale, we decided to do Jaws again, but this time we watched it on Facebook Live. So we couldn't show the movie because that's way illegal, but we encouraged people to watch the movie, you know, to start it at the same time as us. And we were joined by Carolyn Kepnes, author of You, S.A. Cosby, author of Blacktop Wasteland, and Clay McLeod Chapman, author of Whisper Down the Lane.
Two of those authors are former recent Turn the Page guests. So,
oh, that's, I loved Whisper Down the Lane so much. That was such a great book.
So such a good book. So so that means S.A. Cosby, we're coming to interview you soon, because now we need to have the complete set.
His next book is coming out next week. Yeah.
Ooh, so we need to make that connection.
It was a blast to just like watch. Like, I was worried, are we going to not have anything to say? And we had plenty to say.
Well, that actually makes me think, you know, technically you are the very first in a series of programs that Syosset Library has had since the pandemic. We began virtual programming maybe like when the pandemic started, but I believe we had you as one of our first virtual guests. And you had a cocktail while you were talking to us, which made us think maybe we need to call our programs BYOBs with the author, which have been very successful. So thank you for drinking a cocktail and telling us how you were stuck in the house while doing a virtual event.
Books and booze is a great combination. You can't go wrong there.
Absolutely. And, you know, at that point, there were no bars open. There was no anything open. And this was the way that people were socializing and being able to chat with an author and share a drink at the bar in your house, because that's the only bar that was open, was great. And it's been a really good resource, I think, for us and for other libraries. Getting back to Survive the Night. So you also named Charlie after a heroine in a suspense movie. Tell us a little bit about her namesake.
The character Charlie is named after a character in an Alfred Hitchcock film, Shadow of a Doubt. And in that movie, the main character is named Charlie, and she is named after her uncle, Charles, who she suspects is a serial killer. And so I thought it was a nice way of sort of mirroring Shadow of a Doubt, but with a modern sensibility, where there is this character named Charlie who suspects this person of being a serial killer. And in the movie Shadow of a Doubt, young Charlie is just very close to her uncle. And in Survive the Night, Charlie is close physically, alarmingly, to the man behind the wheel of this car.
Yeah, it was really cool. I just like, and that's like one of the things that I enjoy as both a fan of horror and a film theory person. Every time I read your book, there are just these Easter eggs. This one is a little bit more plainly stated, but still cleverly done. You know, just like these little Easter eggs to things that I've enjoyed, or, you know, things that audiences may or may not know. And you don't have to be like a super geek to get it. I think that's, you know, like where the success really comes in, is that your books are just so much fun and also scary at the same time. But also, I know as a reader and as a fan of these things, I can tell you have a lot of fun writing them.
This one was a lot of fun to come up with ways to keep Charlie in that car, and to, I really wanted to push how long I could keep these two characters in a car talking and maintain this level of tension. And I was worried at first that there was no book here, because it just seemed like, oh, this is going to be like a 15-page book. Like, there's nothing I can do to keep this interesting. And then as I was writing it, it's just like, nope, they are still in the car. And I think it's still good and suspenseful. And they are still in the car. And now this is happening. And they're still in the car. And I really wanted readers to get to the point where they're like, are they going to leave the car? And when they do leave the car, to be like, now it gets crazy. And that might have been a little bit of a spoiler. So sorry, everyone.
I mean, you know, everybody has to get out of the car to use the bathroom or, you know, like all of that. So I wouldn't say it's too much of a spoiler. But I do think it calls back in mind just the different road trips that I know I've taken. And I'm sure there are very few people who will read this book who have not taken a road trip. I can't say that all my road trips have gone this crazy, or any of them for that matter. But it is, you know, whether you're in the car with people you know or people you somewhat know because you're taking a ride back with them in college, you are putting a lot of trust into the other people that you're getting into a car with. And at the time that Charlie's doing this, you know, you're always told not to hitchhike. But essentially, like when you were putting your name up on these boards that we mentioned, or even, you know, when I was in college, it was a little bit later. So there were email versions of it, but this was before email dating. So like email dating, huh? I feel like I'm talking about, you know, like, I don't know, the before times. This is before dating on the internet was really what it is now, because if you met somebody online in the late 90s, which is when the internet was really more accessible to everybody, people would be like, what is wrong with you? You can't do that. That is a very bad life choice. Now everybody's sitting with their coffee, swiping left and right. And if you meet somebody in person, that's like, what? Why would you do that? That takes so much time and effort. When we used to agree to get into the car with these people because they were supposedly going in the same direction as us, that is like pretty much hitchhiking, which we were told not to do.
But it was socially acceptable then. Like, and I remember I wasn't in college in 1991. My freshman year started in fall of 1992. But I remember just getting to college, and in the Commons building on campus was this giant wall just filled with flyers with all these phone numbers on it. And I was like, oh, so this is how people, because I always had a car. And so I'm like, this is how people who don't have cars like get home. That's crazy. And it really was just university sanctioned hitchhiking, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So you do something really cool also with music. There's a little bit of a soundtrack to this book. And it is 91 and Nirvana is in it. How did you decide what music to put in the book?
As someone who was a senior in high school in November of 1991, when this book takes place, I can't stress how much of just an impact Nirvana was. Like, we had been listening to Amy Grant and Paula Abdul, who get gently mocked in the book, but, and then Nirvana just hit big and changed music for us. Like, it changed everything. And so I knew that I had to include Nirvana because that's what I was listening to. That was what was in my tape deck in November of 1991. And as a writer, sometimes just certain scenes appear when you're planning something. And one of the first scenes I thought of was just these two people in a car, suspicious of each other, as the opening of Nirvana's Come As You Are plays. And that just, once that stuck in my head, I was like, write that. Come As You Are especially plays a big part in the book. But just lots of songs from that time period that I loved and listened to. Like Depeche Mode and REM and The Cure, and just it's sort of like the soundtrack of my senior year of high school.
I think one thing that always interests me about, like, when people talk about music in the 90s is that grunge was a very short period of time, and it was a very prolific period of time for short. You know, just the explosion of all of these bands like Nirvana, like Pearl Jam, but it didn't, you know, the 90s was like capped by things like Amy Grant and boy bands. So it was like this gift that we were all given in the middle of, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to mock anybody's music taste. You know, I know nowadays people are nostalgic for NSYNC and stuff, but whenever you talk about the 90s, everyone's like, yeah, flannel and grunge. And it's like, yeah, no, that was actually a really short period of time, but it was an impactful period of time. And I kind of loved Charlie discovering grunge in that car, which was like a life-changing event for her. So as you mentioned, the majority of the story takes place in the car, but there's a lot of twists and turns, and it's very focused on dialogue, which I loved. Were you drawing from specific, first of all, have you ever had like a road trip that you got back and you were like, oh my God, I cannot believe that I made that road trip and I am alive at the end of it? And how did you decide to like build, how did you build the dialogue in the book that kept that road trip fresh for the people reading it?
Well, not really. There was never any road trip that really went awry, but there was like in college, there was I think it was Labor Day weekend. A couple of us decided to drive from Penn State to Boston, basically. And we were pretty much just sick of each other by the time we got home. So the ride up there was like, yay. The ride back, no one was talking because we're like, I'm just so tired of being near you. So, but nothing like what Charlie goes through. But with the dialogue heavy scenes in this book, I knew dialogue would have to pull a lot of weight just because of the situation. Like there's only so many ways you can describe two people sitting in a car driving down a highway at night. And so I knew that the dialogue was going to have to be super important. And I worked really hard to hone it. There were multiple revisions where just breaking down the certain parts of dialogue into chunks and examining every word and just thinking, okay, she could be a little bit more suspicious here. He could be a little bit more innocent here. And maybe they can be a little bit flirty here, because that's an interesting thing where it's not like Josh is like this big, scary, menacing dude. Like he's actually kind of charming. And I thought that was a very interesting thing to insert, to have her suspect him of doing horrible things and him suspecting that she suspects him of doing horrible things. Well, at the same time, the two of them maybe possibly having like some chemistry going on.
And that sort of reminds me so she left her boyfriend, who seems to be perfect in every way. And she just decided that, you know, because of everything, this is going to be the end of their relationship. But he's got, like, he checks all the boxes. So, you know, you're immediately wondering why Charlie would make these poor choices of getting in the car with someone she doesn't know and, you know, flirting with somebody when she had a perfectly good boyfriend back in college that she's just leaving.
Charlie is very complicated. And I knew that a lot of people, when they were reading the book, would think, why is she doing this? This is kind of reckless, stupid behavior. And I give a very good reason for why she has to leave right then, but it's not revealed until way late in the book. But even beyond that, I think that she is just reeling from the events of her life. You know, her parents' death she's still affected by, and then her best friend and roommate is murdered. And what does that do to a person's mental state?
It felt like
Yeah, it felt like penance, you know, in a way. Like she was, like she didn't feel like she deserved much. So she was going to take risks with her own life because of all this guilt.
And I think that there was also a lot of, now that her roommate and the basically the source of her entertainment and is gone, you know, Charlie has to, is maybe trying to fill her shoes a little bit, where there's a lot of psychological things going on with Charlie.
Yeah, there definitely is, which I think people are really going to enjoy unpacking, as they say. So this book is great. I think people are going to love it. Are you working on anything now?
I just handed it in to my editor. So next summer's book is well on its way.
Awesome. How many, do you have a contract for like 10,000 more books? Because I'm excited.
Not 10,000, but right now I'm booked up until 2023 with Dutton.
Oh, okay. Wow. So that gives us two more books and hopefully 10,000 more.
And Homer, I'll be exhausted after 10,000. But yeah, so there's definitely more to look forward to, and it's fun. Like I'm finally learning how to enjoy this process. Like in the beginning, it was very fraught because with Final Girls, it was this huge splash that I was not expecting. And, you know, when Stephen King reads your book and publicly endorses your book, it messes with your head a little bit. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself to, I got to be the best. I have to impress Stephen King again, and I have to sell this many copies. And so now I'm really learning to just calm down a little bit and enjoy the process more. And that's definitely what's happening. Like Survive the Night was a joy to write, and this next one was a joy to write. And so I think I'm getting the hang of this being an author thing now.
Awesome. Are you allowed to say anything about your next book, or are we just going?
We will
be surprised.
You will be, yes.
Well, thanks so much. I certainly hope that you continue to watch scary movies with other authors and tweet about it, because that is ridiculously amusing and a lot of fun. Please come back next summer. I'll start bugging your publicist now.
Definitely, I will come back next summer.
All right. This was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest was
Riley Sager.
And I am currently bugging your publicist for next summer. And we are going to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.